From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty, bringing you the news on this day in Maine, Friday, February 17th, 2017. And on this day, Maine's environmental community reacts to the approval of Scott Pruitt as EPA head. And we'll look at some of the trends in library checkouts since the election. That's all ahead in a moment.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by USM's Muskie School of Public Service Master of Public Health Program, preparing students for today's complex population health and health services needs.
As we've been hearing on NPR today, the U.S. Senate has voted to confirm Oklahoma Attorney General Scott Pruitt as head of the Environmental Protection Agency. As Mal Leary reports, environmental activists in Maine say they are upset the vote was allowed before next week's public release of emails between Pruitt and energy company executives.
The Senate voted 52-46 to confirm Pruitt after failed attempts to delay action on the vote. Lisa Pullman, executive director of the Natural Resources Council of Maine, says those senators that forced a vote may well live to regret their decision.
We're extremely dismayed, and the future will show us that these senators that voted to rush this, they're going to own this.
Pullman expects that the emails, which a court has ordered released by next Tuesday, may show even more conflicts of interest for Pruitt than what's already publicly known, such as the 14 lawsuits he brought against the agency he will now lead. Maureen Druin, executive director of Maine Conservation Voters, says having Pruitt leading the EPA will hurt efforts to protect the environment, both in Maine and across the nation.
It's clear that Scott Pruitt will undermine critical protections for clean air, public health, and reverse the progress that we've made to combat climate change.
Maine's two senators, Republican Susan Collins and Independent Angus King, voted against confirmation. But Collins did join with other Republicans in forcing the vote. King supported the delay and warned colleagues that they will have to explain their vote to future generations.
It's a dereliction of our responsibility, and we are going to look back on this moment and say, what were we thinking?
King says Pruitt built his career suing to block environmental rules and has called for weakening the EPA's authority. The White House says Pruitt could take office next week. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Mal Leary.
Mainers concerned, dismayed, or angered by the election of President Donald Trump have made their voices heard with protests in streets and clogging the phone lines of their representatives in Congress. But there's a much quieter movement, some might say, shh, playing out in libraries across the state. Steve Missler has our story.
The Libby Memorial Library in Old Orchard Beach has a single copy of George Orwell's 1984. Library Director Lee Koenig says it was printed 25 years ago.
The pages are yellowing, and it is quite tattered because, of course, it was assigned reading for a long time.
It may have been assigned reading 20 years ago, but not so much now. Yet Koenig says she can't keep the dystopian novel published shortly after the end of World War II on the shelf.
Once it comes in, it just goes right back out again. It is fascinating.
Fascinating. And apparently a trend since the election. And more specifically, since this now famous exchange between NBC News host Chuck Todd and Trump's spokeswoman Kellyanne Conway after the White House made false statements about the size of the president's inauguration crowd.
Sean Spicer, our press secretary, gave alternative facts to that. But the point remains.
Wait a minute. Look, alternative facts are not facts. They're falsehoods.
After this exchange aired, 1984 rocketed to the top of Amazon's computer-generated bestseller list, forcing the publisher to order 75,000 reprints. The reasons are well documented. To many, Conway's reference to alternative facts sounded a lot like newspeak, the language implemented in Oceania, the totalitarian state depicted in Orwell's book, and the film produced in 1984.
It's a beautiful thing, the destruction of words.
Here, the character Syme is discussing the refinements to newspeak with Winston, the lead character.
Well, the revolution will be complete when the language is perfect.
The secret is to move from translation to direct thought to automatic response.
Along with newspeak, Orwell also introduced doublethink, the idea that people can be convinced to accept contradictory facts. Slavery is freedom. Ignorance is strength. War is peace. And that's how some critics view the messaging that's come from Trump and his administration. In addition to 1984, Koenig and other librarians say patrons are showing interest in other books,
with a particular emphasis on government, well, doing bad things.
Bad things, like burning books, as the firemen do in Ray Bradbury's Fahrenheit 451, which is now in constant circulation, as is Sinclair Lewis's semi-satirical novel, It Can't Happen Here, about the rise of fascism. And there's another trend being reported by Maine librarians, which they see as a good thing. Jamie Ritter is the Maine State librarian.
What's been fascinating for us to observe is this almost overnight desire for trusted information.
And in particular, trusted information about how the U.S. government is supposed to work. That includes explanations and copies of the U.S. Constitution and the three branches of government. Jason Fenimore is the director of the Lewis B. Goodall Memorial Library in Sanford.
People are coming into the library and want answers to how much power does this guy have? And what's an executive order?
And they're literally dusting off some very old sources. Fenimore has a 15-year-old copy of the book American Government and the Roots of Reform. The book hadn't been borrowed since 2010, but it's been in circulation since the election. Over at the Libby Memorial Library in Old Orchard Beach, Library Director Lee Koenig recently found herself dusting off The Constitution of the United States, Its Sources and Applications by James Thomas Thornton, released in 1922.
And it has circulated within the last year. This is stunning.
As many librarians point out, these old government texts and novels were once required reading in grade school. And Koenig has a theory about why there's a sudden appetite for basic explanations of U.S. civics.
I think we just have been kind of consuming what is fed us for a long time, which resulted in a somewhat apathetic populace.
And, says Maine State Librarian Jamie Ritter, many people are now seeking out vetted textbooks rather than, quote, fake news.
You know, people are reading. and at core to all of our missions is that.
And for those not sure where to find books about the U.S. government, Jason Fenimore has some directions for your local library.
Go to 320.5 or 320.4.
Oh, and if you're not familiar with the Dewey Decimal System, just ask for help. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Steve Missler.
And my apologies to our librarian listeners, whom I realize don't actually shush people all that often. The word expulsion probably brings to mind disruptive high schoolers, but in fact, many children are expelled as early as preschool. New research shows in Maine, nearly a quarter of child care centers have expelled a child in the last year. Robbie Feinberg reports on what happens to these young kids and how one program is trying to fix it.
Linda Maker loves working with children. It's how she ended up as the program supervisor for the Lubeck Community Outreach Center along the Canadian border. The hardest part of her job, though, is dealing with the few students with destructive behaviors. Those are the high-energy 5 or 6-year-olds who hit other kids and even destroy property. Maker darts across the floor to corral one student.
Look at Miss Maker. Do you think that he was asking you to stop? Was you listening?
Maker doesn't blame the kids. She says their behavior is often related to the stress of poverty, substance abuse, or domestic violence at home. And yet, when these behaviors get too unsafe, Maker and Executive Director Kathy Arrington are forced to make a difficult decision to expel these young students from their child care program.
It's heart-wrenching.
It is. It's very hard, very difficult. Difficult to tell a parent that a child is at the point where they just, it's unsafe to keep them in the program.
We've only had to do that maybe twice, but when it's happened, there's been lots of discussion prior weeks
oh, yeah.
and weeks
oh,
of
yeah.
it. And and trying different things to make that not happen.
What makes this extra hard is Lubeck's isolated location. The community outreach center serves many purposes for the town: thrift store, food pantry, summer and after-school child care. If a child is expelled, where can a parent go to find a new child care center?
I honestly don't know. I would say Machias.
That's about 45 minutes away by car.
And for some, you have to have a vehicle, and they might not. So it's problematic.
With these kinds of economic and domestic issues, an expulsion from a child care or preschool can exacerbate problems for a family. And it's not an issue that's just limited to Washington County. Research shows that Maine has the second highest preschool expulsion rate in the country.
A lot of providers are challenged themselves with how to manage some of these kids and these behaviors.
Rita Furlow is the senior policy analyst for the Maine Children's Alliance. In 2015, her group and the Maine Children's Growth Council began studying the issue. They surveyed child cares and preschools and found that nearly a quarter of Maine center-based providers had to expel a student within the past year. But Furlow says there is a solution, something called early childhood mental health consultations.
That issue just seemed to keep rising to the top in terms of the research and what would be most effective.
Okay.
To see what this looks like, we've got to head back to Lubeck. Program supervisor Linda Maker has brought in Julie Redding, the clinical director with Washington County's Community Caring Collaborative, a community health and support program. Redding racks up hundreds of miles traveling across Washington County, helping preschools and child care centers handle specific students. Redding's job is to serve as a kind of coach. She takes a look at what's working and what needs to be changed. She stands next to Maker as she watches a specific child for about 15 minutes.
Who does he get along with really well, or who's who has a lot of social skills, who is a good match for him?
These are a few strategies for improving behavior.
These guys are playing really nicely right now with the blocks and stuff like that. Is there something that that he really, really loves that he might come out of there to play with?
These aren't big changes. Often it's simply creating more structure or supervision in the program. But Maker says having someone with expertise is helpful, especially in an isolated town like Lubeck.
When I see a child, you know, and I know there's a need there, you know, I just send off an email, this is what's going on. And before, we didn't really have much. I mean, I don't think we had any support system there.
Nationally, this approach has been shown to help reduce expulsions. In Connecticut, similar programs are in use statewide. For Maine, though, it's still mostly limited to Washington County. Rita Furlow with the Maine Children's Alliance says only recently have preschool expulsions been recognized as a problem in Maine. But she says with growing legislative support, she's hopeful the state will see the value in intervening early on. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Robbie Feinberg.
And that's This Day in Maine, Friday, February 17th, 2017. Thanks to Ed Morin and our digital team, I'm Nora Flaherty. Have a great weekend.